Before we begin, I'd like to ask God that God set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live and see your truth. Help me carry your message tonight. Amen. Okay, the birthdays tonight were awesome. Covered all the aspects of alcoholism. On Sunday night, we're going to be picking up on page 19. I don't know if this is the 10th or 11th time through the book. Doesn't matter. When there's a solution, we're going to be looking at the problem and the solution in this chapter. And then we're going to do more about alcoholism. Then we're going to find out about God and our relationship with God. Then we're going to get to how it works and work the steps. So I don't know about you, it's always pretty exciting. And these first chapters have so much in them. Wednesday night, we do have a meeting at 7:30. And we're going to look at fear. Step 4, fear inventory. Powerful pages, saved my life. On Saturday, we're on step 11, different part of the book. We're on page 86 and 87. If you could join us, we're going to look at the final instructions on those powerful pages on how prayer, meditation, and what we're supposed to do every day whenever agitated or doubtful. Tonight, I'd like to pick up on page 19. On the middle paragraph, it says, in this chapter, we covered page 17, which tells us there are two powers we need. We need the power of the common peril. We're all alcoholics, aren't we? And we were all shipwrecked, and we hit the iceberg, and we got in the boat. And AA is the boat that took us to shore, and we're all standing on shore. But if we want to stay together and not hit the iceberg again, we have to have the common solution. That's the cement that holds us together. No program, no working the steps, you don't have the cement. And so originally when this book was written, everybody who went to meetings worked the steps. Wasn't an option, because if you hadn't worked the steps, you didn't go to the meeting. And there were only 70 or 80 people. And so that page has a lot of significance today. Fellowship is great. We can't survive without it, but we have to follow the program and do the steps, not be in the program, but work the steps to have the spiritual solution. And then we started last night talking about how we look to other people and our problem. And now we're going to get into our alcoholism, what makes me an alcoholic. And it says, they talked about many could recover if they had the opportunity we have enjoyed. They used the word recover again. And recover just means that I'm not suffering from a hopeless condition of mind and body today. I'm not under the power of alcohol right now. I can see the truth about it. Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
It's great, but there's a warning label. The warning label is alcohol is a subtle foe. And we only have a daily reprieve that's based upon maintaining a fit spiritual condition. If I'm not fit spiritually, I can't react sanely to alcohol. And so they were wondering when they wrote this book that they thought if they wrote this book, people would read the book, be able to work the steps and have what they had and be recovered. And that's what they said in the foreword. They said, we've recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. This book is to provide clear-cut directions on how they achieve that. Now, if you have another way to recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body, fine. But if you don't, I suggest you read and study the book and then do what's in the book. And if you do, tell us if your life gets better. It's an experiment. AA doesn't tell you what to do. They just suggest if you have no other plan, try this. And then tell us if it works. And Robert powerfully told us how it worked today. Steve, the others, powerfully how it works. And it does work. I tell you, it works for me. So it says, and how shall we present which has been solely freely given us? They had a gift. It's a gift from God. And so here's what they said. We have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. Would this be a good book to read then? It says, we shall bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. Now, if they just brought knowledge, it wouldn't mean anything. But they brought their experience. This is what they did. You may not like the book. You may not think you need it. Fine. They don't care. But if you want to know their experience and know what happened, read the book. People don't want to do the steps. They don't come in AA and say, please, I want to work the steps right away and give me a book and help me do them. One, nowadays, people don't even know what the program is, most of them, and the steps. But without this book, we would not have the solution. And it says it's a useful program for anyone concerned with the drinking problem, not just the alcoholic. The wives could use this. Every human being could use these 12 spiritual principles. They were given by God on how we have a relationship with God. He didn't say, now I'm giving you these spiritual principles and only alcoholics can do it. No. He gave it to alcoholics. I don't know why God didn't tell me this, but it may be that he knew we would be desperate enough to do this. Because why? If we don't have a spiritual life, we drink and die. And so we have a tremendous desperation of a drowning man, somebody read today. It says, of necessity, we will have to discuss matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, by their very nature, controversial. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which could contain no basis for contention or argument. I don't think you can do anything in AA that won't cause contention or argument. It's almost impossible. Why? Because we're all alcoholics and that's just the way it is. But we shall do our utmost to achieve that ideal. They tried to write a book that didn't have rules. It had suggestions. It had musts, but they didn't tell you. It's not a religious book. It's a spiritual book. Most of us, now this next, I think it's one whole line. No, it's two lines are so powerful, and they're not read at many meetings. But it really is the whole deal. They're telling you the whole deal right now. Most of us sense that real tolerance for other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions and our attitudes which make us more useful to others. Isn't that what the whole program's about? How can I be of use to other? How can I be tolerant of other people's shortcomings, which means just their personality? How can I be considerate? How can I have respect for their opinions, this attitude? And that's not an attitude that I had when I came in here, and I still don't have it all the time. But it's an attitude that if I'm close to God, that's the attitude I'll have. If I'm close to God, I'm going to be tolerant. I'm going to have respect for other people, and then I can be useful to others. If I'm intolerant, I'm not respectful of other people, I have a self-centered attitude, then I'm not going to help anybody. And the other thing is, if I can't help anybody else, I can't help myself, and I'm mired in my alcoholism and my spiritual malady. Our very lives, you think they mean their very lives? As ex-problem drinkers, depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Wow. Anybody constantly think of others? Anybody not think about yourself today at all? No. But we don't want to be that person. It says that we read it on Saturday in step 11 when we retire at night. Were we thinking of others? Were we thinking of what we could pack in the stream of life? Were we being loving and kind to everyone? Well, we're not perfect, but we say progress, not perfection. Are we getting better? Are those the things we're seeking? And actually, the constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. I put this, I thought of this today when I was looking at this. I go from self to God, and then from God to others. It all starts with going to God, and then I think of others. I have to get connected to God to think of others and how I may help their needs. To get out of self, I have to get connected to God. And so it's a struggle. But we do better. I'm doing better than I used to. And I can recognize when I'm not. And then I say, well, I need to be kind and helpful and tolerant of shortcomings. And how we may help meet their needs. And the other thing is, we have to think of how we may help meet their needs. I may not know how. So that's where I ask God to show me how I can be helpful to other people. Isn't that what we say when the four step, how can I be helpful to this person? How can I be kind? And we read yesterday on the 11th step, when we face indecision, we ask God for the right thought or action, how I can be helpful. And so it all really centers on God, and then the others follow. Service and how you may meet their needs. You may have also have already asked yourself, why does it all of us became so very ill from drinking? Anybody get ill here? Doubtless, no, I'm the only one. Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why in the face of, and I was ill in a lot of ways. I was ill, some physically, but mentally. I was beaten. I was full of fear. I was hopeless in my mind to fix my problems. And that wasn't from alcohol. That was from being separated from God and self-centered. But being separated from God and self-centered, alcohol was a solution for a time, but it stopped working. Doubtless you're curious to discover how and why. So this is, you're reading the book for the first time. You think you're an alcoholic, and you're reading this to see if this applies to you, right? And they've given you a lot of information, doctor's opinion, Bill's story, up to page 20. So now they say you're probably curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you're new, you may be wondering, well, what do I have to do, right? And it says, if you're an alcoholic and wants to get over it, you may be already asking, what do I have to do? Sandy Beach says this is the only question you should really be asking if you're new. We don't really want to know what you think you need to do. That's completely irrelevant. That got you here. You need to ask us, what do we have to do? What do I have to do? And then he says, next. It's a series of, what do I have to do next? I do that. What do I do next? So the sponsorship should be a guide down the path of spiritual progress, helping the person say, what do I need to do next? And it should be what you did. Now, if you haven't done any of this, you may not know what to do. So that's how the AA was supposed to work. You did it. You told the other person what you did. They ask you. You tell them. You do it with them. It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. You see why I have such passion about this book? I can't answer the questions of what you should do. But I can, having done this, I can tell you what the book says you should do and what I did. That's all I can do. And then either you do it or not. And they answer the question specifically. There are specific instructions here. It's not very complicated. It takes 88 pages to get a relationship with God and a power to live and to be recovered. So from page 28, 68 pages, if you pick it up, it's not even that heavy. I bet everybody in this room could pick up these pages. You could probably read them in one night. Now, reading one to you is good, but if you do it, it's going to change your life. Desperation of a drowning man. Any desperate people in here? Do this. I guarantee you can't do this and live this and not have your life change. It's not possible. We shall tell you what we have done. Before going into detailed discussion, maybe we ought to summarize some points as we see them. So they're going to summarize some of the things that they've talked about, doctor's opinion, the disease of alcoholism, Bill's story, the hopeless condition of mind and body, what happened to Bill, how they described it, how what happened to him. And now they're going to talk about power of choice, power of control. I ask a lot of people when they come in new, what's wrong with you? Well, they have a lot of answers. They've been to treatment. They've heard a lot of things. But they don't really have clear in their mind. Loss of control, loss of choice. That's the deal. And when you have loss of control and loss of choice, you have a hopeless condition of mind and body. And it says, how many times have people said this? I could take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. I love this one. His willpower must be weak. They don't know us. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. But there he is, all lit up again. Now, these are commonplace observations. This is how we look to other people. So it says on the second step, we came to believe the power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Anybody remember that? Right? Well, this is insane. Anybody who does the things we just read, it's insane, right? And so it says, now these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. One thing that this book has done, and AA in general, has helped the world understand us and be more tolerant of us. A lot of new people don't want anybody to know they're in AA. You know, it's like, oh my, I don't want people to know. I've never seen anybody upset that somebody went to AA. I've seen people upset when you did go to AA. But AA is respected, and people are trying to get well. People respect that. It's a disease. You're powerless. You have a powerless disease, but at least you're doing something about it. And that's just in the beginning. We have ego, like Steve was talking about. We don't want anybody to know. We think we're so important. You know what? Most people don't really care. Sorry, but it's probably true. I would see people in my practice all the time, and they'd see me for meetings or the family, and we just talk about it. I had no shame at all. It is what it is. And if people can't accept you, well, that's their problem. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are much different from ours. And I talked about how we react if we have a spiritual relationship. They react differently to alcohol than we do. So they can't see it. They can't understand us. And I don't know if you can understand them. You ever go on a cruise ship and people are waving over their glasses and leaving the wine and everything? It's just, you know, they're tasting it. You ever see how people taste the wine? You know, they swirl it around and they taste it. Well, we don't do that. Did anybody do that? Anybody go to the store and take a swig and say, no, this is no good. I'm giving this one back. Did anybody ever refuse a drink in this room? If you did, you're in the wrong place. All right. Moderate drinkers have little trouble giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it. They can take it or leave it alone. Now, I'm going to give you a hint. Moderate drinkers don't remember the last day they drank. There are a lot of people. One guy gave a few. He says, I haven't drank for 6.5 days, but I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if he is or not, but most people who are moderate drinkers don't remember their last day, right? And I was on a cruise where I didn't drink, and this guy, they ate dinner with several times, and they were really puzzled that I wasn't drinking, and they drank quite a bit. I don't know how much. I don't know anything about them, really. But after the last night, the guy said to me, you know, I haven't drank for 5 days. I said, that's good. If you have a problem, I got a book for you. You know, now, something about my not drinking affected him, and I think he had a problem, and he decided he was going to not drink. And so he may be a minor drinker, but I don't know. He may be a hard drinker. Hard drinkers love Alcoholics Anonymous. Joe and Charlie make the point. Because they may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause them to die. You know, alcohol, the effect of alcohol can affect your mind and your body. It can cause memory loss and severe liver damage and other problems, neurologic problems. It may cause them to die a few years before his time. There are people who die of alcoholic cirrhosis who may not be alcoholics, they're just hard drinkers. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, I don't know about that one, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor, would you have stopped drinking for anybody else? Probably not. Becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate. See, on his own power, he has not lost the power of choice. He can choose to stop drinking. Although he may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. Now, Joe and Charlie make the point, I don't know if it's true or not, but I laughed when they said it, that people who are really heavy drinkers love AA because they come here, they quit drinking, and they don't have to work the steps. You know, they love it. They love the fellowship. They love the program. They feel welcome. They love it. But they don't have an illness that requires a spiritual experience to conquer. See, if you have an illness, and it says that, we're going to read that, alcoholism is a spiritual illness requiring a spiritual experience to conquer, then just coming to meetings and not drinking won't treat that. But what about the real alcoholics? Any real alcoholics in here?
Yeah.
He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or not become a continuous hard drinker, but here's what makes you a real alcoholic. At some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Anybody have that? Most people have it from the beginning. Does anybody here remember their first drink? Yeah, you see, most alcoholics don't remember their first drink. But I remember I had a beer when I was 17 at Duke, and it tasted terrible. And I had like four or five of them. And I was 17. What did I mean, it was really funny tasting stuff. I have issues. But I drank four or five of them. And then I couldn't wait for the keg on Saturday. We used to hire buses to bring the girls from the girls' college, because we were freshmen. None of the freshman girls at Duke would go out with us. And we would bus them in, and we'd have the keg. Bust in the babes. I'm on tape. I shouldn't say all that. It was a long time ago. And I really looked forward to that keg. And the first time, I got drunk and threw up. And I said, wow, that was pretty good. You know? The next morning, I said, well, when's the next keg? Next week. So I don't know. It is what it is. I mean, it wasn't something that I had any power over. Here's the fellow who's been puzzling you, especially his lack of control. He does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. Now, here they're going to talk a little bit about what happens when you drink because you can't control and bad things happen, right? Here's a rear Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He's seldom mildly intoxicated. Why? We can't control how much we drink, right? He's always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition, I don't know if this is true, while drinking resembles his normal nature but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, yet let him drink for a day and he frequently becomes disgustingly and even dangerously antisocial. Any social people in here? We couldn't see ourselves. He has a positive, now here's a good one. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. Now, what does that mean? It means you have something very important to do, and you drink, and you know you're not going to be able to control how much you drink. But you say to yourself, I can, but you can't keep from drinking, and you have something important to do. And then you screw it up. That's the loss of choice. You don't have the power of choice. And usually when you do that, it pisses people off, right? He is often, I don't know if this is true, perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor. I don't believe that. But you got to remember, they're salesmen. It's page 21. They don't want to scare you off, right? They're not going to tell us about the spiritual malady and our selfish self-centered until we can handle it on page 60, right? And it says, he often, I don't know who wrote this, we possess special ability, skills, and aptitudes. Anybody believe that? Has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a bright outlook for his family and himself, and then he pulls the structure down on his head by a senseless series of spree. See, no matter what your special ability, skills, or aptitude, no matter how promising your career, no matter how bright your outlook for your family and yourself, it's never enough to treat alcoholism. That's what they're saying. It's never enough. And you pull it down. He's a fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated, ought to sleep the clock around. Yet early next morning, he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. Anybody do that? If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away from him to throw down the waste pipe. Now, why would you have liquor concealed? You don't want to run out. Remember the warning label? This bottle will run out. Then other people are bothered by our drinking, and they don't want you to drink, right? Did anybody in this room hide alcohol?
Yes.
Did anybody come home from treatment and find alcohol hidden away? Couldn't even remember where we hid it. All I remember was carrying up all those empty Kahlua bottles from under the stairs. There must have been 100 of them, these huge, big bottles. And I had to carry them up, and I looked at that container full of Kahlua bottles, and I said, you know, I should take a picture of this. I didn't have a phone in those days. You could take, and remember this. If ever I thought I wasn't an alcoholic, right? Normal people don't do that, do they? And so, but we should ask people, when they come in, they don't know if they're alcoholic, ask them if they ever hide alcohol. We had that one sweet lady, I think she's got almost 2 years now, she came in, she wasn't an alcoholic, she wasn't sure, right? She did that for like a month or two, but she later told us she'd go out and have the, she was drinking alcohol at the meeting, it was hidden in a thermos. And normal people don't usually do that. We begin to use a common, especially at an AA meeting, right? Begins to use a, anybody got any cups in here we should check? Begins to use a combination of high power, anybody use sedatives and liquor to quiet your nerves? Anybody have nerve problems in the morning?
Yes.
Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it sober. This is a powerful line. I cannot make it sober and I get drunk all over again. I can't take the first drink drunk, the first drink I have to take sober. And I ask people all the time, when does the disease of alcoholism occur? When you're sober. And you can't live life with your emotions without seeking the ease and comfort of alcohol. I want to stop right there. We're going to pick up where, why does he behave like this, and then about the mind, and then the powerful page 24 where it describes our disease. So we'll stop with that, and we'll pick up on page 22 next time. Thank you.